Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here. How many of you are public health nurses or nurses? I should probably ask who is not. My favorite audience to speak with. So I'm going to be, first of all, I wish I had financial relations, but I don't actually, so I have nothing to declare. And I'm going to be talking about a specific aspect of the work of a nonprofit organization called the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, and we've got several members here in the audience. And this specifically falls into a framework that was created by the Institute of Medicine in a report, Nursing Health and the Environment, that said that environmental health needs to be integrated into nursing education, our research, our clinical practice, and policy and advocacy. And so the example that I'm going to be working with is to talk about how we are trying to integrate environmental health knowledge around and practice and policy around fracking. And I thought I'd start out and probably spend about half of my little time allotted to just help people understand sort of the relationship of public health to fracking. So if you look at the pink areas here on the map, these are areas that have what are called shale plays, which means they have the potential to have natural gas in them and therefore the potential to be fracked. How many of you really don't know what fracking is? I mean, you've heard the words, but you don't really know what it is. So very quickly, it is a relatively new way of exploring for natural gas, but also for oil, where you drill down deeply and then go horizontally. You, under very high pressure, put a set of toxic chemicals, sand, water, lots and lots of water, down, push this through, shatter the shale, and extract the gas. You extract back those chemicals along with the gas, and then you have to take those chemicals and that water, which is now contaminated water, put it somewhere, which will either go into a holding pond temporarily and then taken by pipes or trucks and re-injected back into the land somewhere. There are a lot of places in which human health effects can be seen here, and a lot of health risks that we know we'll probably see in the future. And some of that is because in this process, they use known 353 chemicals. And when Theo Colburn et al. Looked at these chemicals, looked at the peer-reviewed toxicological research on these chemicals, discovered this array of associated health risks. So, for instance, 75% of those 353 chemicals were associated with skin and eye irritation, respiratory problems, and GI problems. And you can see that these are represent a set of chemicals, and every individual frack can take about 40,000 gallons of these chemicals, and that's in addition to the water that's put into a frack site. So we know that we're beginning to see sets anecdotally of a variety of immediate symptoms of children and adults in the area: nausea and vomiting, nosebleeds, flu-like symptoms, headaches, hair loss. In addition, and I'm only just giving you tiny little wisps of some of the health studies, they're fairly elaborate and developing literature now about the health effects. But APGAR scores, which as nurses you know are the scores that a newborn gets immediately at birth and then a few minutes later, these indicate the general wellness, well appearance, whether they're breathing, whether they're floppy or they've got some muscle tone, etc. And what we've discovered is that those children who are born to mothers who lived within a mile and a half of a frack site have statistically lower APGAR scores at birth and then a few minutes later. There are also an array of injury risks that happen as well. We see blowouts at the well site. We are now seeing earthquakes in places that had no earthquakes before because you're drilling down, putting propellants in, exploding underground, and so forth. Contaminated groundwater, surface water, and soil. This is a photo, actually, of one of the fracking camps. These are known to the public health nurses who live in these areas as the man camps. They are entirely male. And they come along with then an additional set of social health risks. So more drinking while driving winds up being recorded, increases in sexually transmitted diseases, increased use of social services in often very underserved communities, and then rent increases, which then creates a whole host of other problems. So right now in North Dakota, there are parts of North Dakota near frack sites where the rents are higher than in San Francisco, where I'm from, which is abominable for us who live in San Francisco. But if you're an elderly person who's come off the farm or a rural area and now looking for housing, it's unaffordable for you to stay in your own community. So we're watching land that was, you know, usable land for an array of things, whether it was grazing or actually growing produce, that after being fracked is sort of useless for everybody. There's water contamination. There's a huge amount of water that's used. They're looking to frack in California, where we really don't have enough water. The very last thing we want to be doing is using more water there. And then, as I said, you've got to do something with it. So we've got temporary holding. What happens in areas that are prone to flooding is these holding ponds are holding nothing. So also, there are volatile organic compounds in these holding ponds, and those all outgas at room temperature. So this is just an up close and personal of a quote-unquote holding pond. The other thing is that a huge amount of traffic is created by these fracking operations. And so you've got the pumping trucks that are all using diesel, and that much diesel that is being used 24/7 in areas creating ground level ozone, which is a particular problem to lung function, as you can see from the notes here. So we're seeing in these rural areas, we're seeing traffic where they never saw traffic before, but not just traffic, but truck traffic. And it's 24/7 traffic in many of these areas, so you're seeing a range of problems associated with that. At this point in time, and growing, we've got 15 million Americans living within a mile of a frack site. So this is, and I just heard from a colleague from LARA that they're about to frack in Virginia, which they weren't fracking in. Of particular concern to public health nurses is that there are no setback requirements for fracking. You can have a frack site at the fence line of a grammar school or a nursery school. No requirements anywhere in the country about that. And in fact, today, we are working with some environmental groups in California and doing a press release and having nurses who attended the frack camp I'll talk about in a second are joining that press release for new data about how many children in California now live within a mile of a frack site and how many schools are even closer than that to a frack site. So when I left Texas after working with some nurses there, what I discovered when I was lifting off and I looked down, these are frack sites from the air outside of San Antonio. So the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, or the Alliance of Healthy Nurses, which we are too, but we decided that we needed to do about this and something about this several years ago, created a fracking committee, and Ruth McDermott Levy out there, raise your hand, and Katie Heflin both were involved initially. They're in the Marcellus Shale area and have been working in Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, Ohio, and West Virginia. But we also, and they've been doing a variety of policy activities, training nurses there. We got a little bit of dedicated funding in California where we're just starting in the last couple of years to do more of this fracking, to put together, to try something new. So we created a fracking camp for nurses. And what we did was we brought nurses together and we selected those nurses and asked for nurses to apply who were from the areas that were going to be fracked, so the Central Valley and some of the areas in Southern California. There were only a couple of them that were public health nurses. There were two dozen nurses. We had school nurses. We had a retired head of nursing for a health department in Kern County, one of the counties that is most implicated in this. And Kern County already has the worst air pollution in the state and one of the worst air pollutions in the country, and they're doing fracking there. We had a range of speakers, so we helped folks understand what fracking is. I gave you the wind bank quick though, but they got it over 2 hours, so really to understand what fracking is, the health effects associated with it, where we are in terms of regulations, policies, and so forth. And then that was all in one day, so it was sort of jam-packed. On the second day, we spent the first half of the day talking about skill building the nurses on how do you get your messages out. How do you get letters to the editor or op-eds or do a press release and have a press conference? Skills that all nurses should have, but a lot of us didn't get in nursing school, so we were sort of retrofitting them with that. In the afternoon, we spent time on how do you lobby? How do you actually go and talk to your state legislator, your local commissioner, county commissioner? And how do you talk to a regulator? So there's different conversations you would have with these different folks. The messaging may be the same. And for us, how do we talk to our governor who think about that? So our messaging out of this workshop was we wanted to press the pause button on fracking in California because there are just too many public health risks to consider at this point, and that we really wanted Governor Brown, who can unilaterally call for a moratorium on fracking. So we're putting a lot of our emphasis on Governor Brown. We then, on the third day, went to Sacramento. And so about two-thirds of the nurses actually either tried to meet with legislators. I'm sure those of you who know, meeting with legislators is not always that easy. Meeting with staff, much easier. So many of them met with staff, but staff are really important. And then a third of us actually went to the regulatory agencies. So the agency, the State Department of Health that was in charge of this, CARB, which is the California Air Resource Board, responsible for air pollution in the state, and DOGGR, which is the Department of Oil and Gas and Geological Exploration and Resources. And so we actually, as nurses, had really good conversations with these folks who often were just approached by the environmentalist community around this. So we really focused on human health, and our reception was very different. And the regulators, several of them said, please keep coming back and talking to us. Please keep asking these hard questions of us. Because right now our governor is pro-fracking, so we needed to work with them. So outcomes, we had a variety of letters to the editors and op-eds that were published. One I just want to tell you as an aside was not published in California, but one was published in Pennsylvania, and that's because Susan G. Cummins actually has allied itself with Baker Hughes, which is a manufacturer of fracking drills. Baker Hughes committed to making 1,000 pink fracking drills and gave $100,000 to Susan G. Cummins. We thought, that's not so good. That makes no sense whatsoever. So we wrote letters about that to raise, not just to raise awareness about what Susan G. Cummins was doing, but about fracking as well. Many of the people we trained then went back to either their other school nurses or their health agencies or their universities if they were academic nurses and presented. We had several that have gone and made visits to their home office of their legislators, which is important. Now we've started to have regular calls. This was, if you can see the nurses decry fracking's impact. That was in a newspaper in Sacramento right around the time that we were doing the fracking workshop. We did get some new funding we're grateful for, so we now have a part-time organizer who is helping us continue to move on. I think that this mode of pulling nurses together could work for many other new and emerging public health issues as a way of taking the time to teach about what is the evidence about this issue, skill building them on how they can have an influence on policy, and then marching them into the policy offices. I think, and I'm sharing this because I'm obviously interested in fracking in the environment, but it could be around an emerging infectious disease. It could be around any number of other public health policies or problems. I think this could work. So some of the other things that happen is that we built relationships with each other. We built relationships with the experts and the environmentalists who we brought in and now feel very comfortable calling us or us calling them to ask questions about these issues. We also did this skill building that's transferable for these nurses in other issue areas. And we empowered the nurses. And I think, as I said, this is transferable. And this particular issue of fracking is only going to get worse in this country. I'm not sure it'll ever get better, but it is going to continue to be a problem that plagues us. And so with that, I think I'm done. Oh, have you been doing that?
No.
Because I haven't been paying any attention.
You're fine.
So wait till the end for questions?
Yes.
Okay.